Welcome to the Mitch and Nils Bull Show, episode 13, that Luke Longley Joakim number. Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Nils. Kind of weird kicking it to myself there. We are not experts. We are not analysts. We are not insiders. We are just a couple of dudes who enjoy talking shop about your Chicago Bulls. You can find us on ShyCitySports.com, follow us on Twitter at The Bull Show, like us on Facebook, and of course, download all episodes on iTunes. I'm sure our quote-unquote fan base or usual set of listeners are probably wondering the whereabouts of my partner in crime, Mitch, but unfortunately he couldn't make today's recording due to a scheduling conflict. I believe he's probably at some Ben Gordon autograph signing or something. So I'll be flying solo for better or worse. I'm sure that after listening to my voice for a half hour straight, you'll miss Mitch even more than I already do. So instead of trying to get my Doug Tonis on in a one-man act, we've invited to the show a friend of ours and our very first professional basketball player to appear. Please welcome former Chicago Bull, Joe Alexander. Joe, how's it going?
I'm good. How you doing?
Doing well, man. Thanks for coming on. Appreciate you joining me today.
Anytime, man.
So for our listeners who aren't aware, Joe was the 8th overall pick in the 2008 draft, acquired by the Milwaukee Bucks, then was traded to the Bulls in February 2010. Joe, you may also have the best nickname out right now, Vanilla Sky. Is it true that the originator of that nickname was none other than our friend Nadav Moore?
That is true, actually. I can't remember exactly when he did it. It was sometime when I was in college, I think. But the nickname did make its way all the way to Dan Patrick, I believe.
Oh, really?
I think he put it on his blog at some point, or it was in a couple magazines or something, and I know that they didn't give Nadav credit for it, and I think that he was a little bit jaded by that. But
I'm definitely vibing the nickname, and for sure, I told Nadav that if the topic ever got brought up, I'd give him a shameless plug, shameless shout-out.
No, he deserves it. I mean, in my opinion, it is one of the better nicknames out. I mean, not just because, you know, for me, but I think it's one of the more creative ones out there, and he definitely deserves credit for it.
For sure. So, believe it or not, I'm no Ahmad Rashad. I'm not some professional media reporter, but I think it makes sense to kind of start out at the beginning of your NBA career. You were a highly touted prospect coming out of West Virginia, and there were some reports they had one of the most impressive pre-draft combine workouts. What do you recall from that experience, and what was it that you did to raise your stock so high?
Yeah, well, you know, when I was initially coming out after my junior year, no one was really sure where I would go or if I should even leave school early. You know, half the people that I talked to said that I needed to go back to school and get another year under my belt. Not specifically because they thought I wasn't ready for the NBA, but because they thought that I wasn't going to get drafted very high, you know, all. So a lot of people were saying I'd go in the second round and with a slight chance of going at the end of the first. And then, obviously, you know, I went 8th, but, you know, that was all just a product of I really, you know, had great numbers at the draft combine as far as, you know, like sprinting, vertical jump, all the bench press, like all that kind of stuff. And then I thought I had good showings at each individual, you know, mini camp that I went to for each team, because every player goes to, you know, a one-day tryout. I call it a mini camp, but, you know, you go to a one-day tryout where you're there with four other guys that are, you know, trying to get drafted, and they basically just have you play one-on-one with each other all day, you know, one-on-one, two-on-two. They take you through little drills in the post and just see what your skills are like, and that was really what I think set me apart.
I see. So it sounds like you did at least a little bit more than Corey Maggette in 1999, who was rumored to be doing so terrible during his pre-draft workout that his agent told him to take his shirt off and just start dunking. Apparently it worked for him, so I don't know if the... It sounds like you did a little bit more.
Yeah, I did a little more take my shirt off and dunk, although I will say that being a good dunker definitely helps you in these kind of things. And it's not exactly an exact science, so when coaches see guys out there throwing it down real hard and being real athletic, it sometimes skews their interpretation of your skills.
Sure. So you get drafted 8th overall by the Bucks, and what was that like? Describe the scene and the feeling on draft night.
I mean, for me, it was just madness. It was surreal. It just kind of felt like a dream because, you know, I'd been trying to get to the NBA since I was 10 years old, and to actually not just be going to the NBA, but to be at the draft, because not everybody gets to actually go to the draft to be in the green room.
Right.
And get to walk across the stage. You know, that made it really special for me.
Nice. Yeah, that must have been an honor. That draft, of course, was when the Bulls began their return back to the NBA's elite. by selecting Derrick Rose with the number one pick after having a 1.7% chance to win the draft. Did you get a chance to interact either at the combine or even during in the green room with a lot of the players in your draft class?
Yeah, you know, when the 15 of us show up there, we all pretty much hang out in the days leading up to it. We all stay at the same hotel, and then we have to do little rehearsals, and you know, everyone, you know, gets to hang out and get to know each other a little bit. At that point, everyone knows each other, you know, from the past and, you know, just coming up through the ranks. But it was a good time for us to kind of sit around and get to know each other a little bit better.
Anyone in particular stood out to you for better or for worse while being in that company?
You know, there's a lot of dynamic personalities. A lot of what stood out to me the most was a lot of the guys that already went out and bought real expensive jewelry, and they were all showing it off to each other, which I thought was kind of funny.
Now, that's funny that you mentioned the jewelry, because if I remember correctly, I was going to bring this up later, but since we're on the topic now, I remember when I visited your place once up in Milwaukee, the first thing that I noticed was this full life-sized knight in full bodysuit and armor. Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, that was one of your first purchases once you got to the league?
Yeah, actually... you know, in college and even before that, whenever I had flown, they have that little magazine, it's a Sky Mall magazine.
Yeah.
Very familiar with it.
Right.
And they
would
have ridiculous things in there. And I'd always seen that suit of armor in there. And it was, you know, too expensive for me at the time, obviously, because I was a college kid. And so once I got to the NBA, the first thing I did was I went online and got it.
So while most players hit up the jewelry store, you're checking out Sky Mall.
Yeah, man.
What's that? Nice, nice. So, yeah. You know, you're headed to Milwaukee. Did you have any reservations about playing for the city or specifically Coach Scott Skiles?
No, I wasn't really thinking about things in terms of what city I was in or what coach I was playing for, to be honest with you. Mm-hmm. Only thing I was thinking of when I got drafted was trying to get myself ready to, you know, to do what I do, you know.
Right.
You know, trying to shake any jitters that I had and trying to be physically prepared. So, you know, I wasn't really concerned about the city specifically or even Scott Skiles.
Yeah, so was he as former Bulls coach, I think Skiles, you know, had developed a reputation for being, you know, pretty much a hard ass. Was he as demanding of a coach as he's been portrayed or seemed?
Yeah, well, first I'll say that, you know, anytime, you know, the media portrays a coach, it's typically not in line with reality. And,
really?
You know, yeah, you know, across the board in the NBA, you know, the coaches are all demanding in their own ways. You know, I haven't found any coach that I've had, you know, I played for three coaches in the NBA and worked out for tons of others. And I haven't found anyone to be overtly like, you know, just crazy demanding to the point where you'd say, you know, totally different from any other coach.
Right.
So from that standpoint, I'd say that, you know, Skiles is, you know, pretty normal for an NBA coach. He places most of his emphasis on defense,
okay,
which I would say gives him the appearance of being more demanding just by the nature of defense being more demanding than offense.
Right.
But, you know, overall, you know, everyone takes their craft very seriously. Everyone puts in the time and details and effort to make sure the players are doing everything they need to be doing. And Skiles is the same way.
Gotcha. So, what were some of your expectations going in your rookie year?
Well, I had a lot of expectations for myself. You know, I wanted to perform well and help the team win. I wanted to get a lot of minutes and you know, and make a name for myself. And
right.
You know,
put Vanilla Sky on the map.
Put Vanilla Sky on the map, exactly. Yeah, and you know, some of that was derailed a little bit right from the start. And
right, because you suffered a pretty bad hamstring injury, right?
Was in my second. That was in my second year.
Okay.
Hamstring, but in my rookie year, I had suffered a different injury in my abdomen, so that kind of back. I had missed training camp, so I missed the first 4 to 6 weeks of the season in training. So
right, so you're a little bit already behind the curve.
Just a little bit, yeah.
Okay, so when you were coming into the league, was there anyone that you either idolized or tried to emulate?
When I was really young?
Both. When you were young or even when you got into the league and there was someone that you saw, whether it be a teammate or opponent, that you were like, all right, I want to model my game after his.
Yeah. Well, when I was really young, obviously, I was just trying to be like Michael Jordan, just like everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But at that point, you know, you don't really understand the game and understand why you want to be like a player. You just, you know, just like what you see in their advertisements. Mm-hmm. But as I got older, you know, I really loved, to be honest, I loved David West's game.
Really?
You know, I was coming into the league. Yeah, you know, he's a great mid-range shooter. And, you know, as being a power forward myself in college, you know, I realized the importance of just having a knockdown mid-range game.
Right.
I mean, David West obviously is a great post player, but, you know, he makes his bread and butter just finding open spots and knocking down shots.
Mm-hmm. And, yeah, you know, he definitely gives that Indiana team that inside toughness that I think that they were lacking in previous years. As you know, obviously a big Bulls fan that I am, he scares me a little bit. You know, I think that he I wouldn't say he puts them over the top, but that Indiana team is going to be a force to be reckoned with in the future.
Yeah, they're certainly getting stacked over there, and he adds a lot to them. And you know, I really admire his game a lot. I think he brings a lot to the table.
Yeah, and I think you know, if you're able to kind of control the inside of the paint, especially with the defending champion Miami Heat, it pains me just to say that. You know, they came close to knocking them out. Not as close as say Boston, but I think what was very effective for them was maintaining that inside presence with David West, Roy Hibbert. I think that, you know, they have a very bright future ahead of them.
Yeah, and you got to give Hibbert a lot of credit for what he's done since he came to the league. He's just, yep, you know, gotten better and better every year in a way that really nobody expected. You know, he kind of defied everybody, and he's turned out to be a really, really good addition for them.
For sure, for sure. Yeah. So going back to your rookie campaign, what would you say is your welcome to the NBA moment? Did you get crossed pretty bad at any point? Did you have your shot sent to the seventh row? When did you realize you're playing at another level?
I'd say I realized I was playing at another level when I, you know, showed up to practice on the first day and I realized how hard everybody goes.
Yeah.
You know, because in college, I prided myself, at least in my later years, as being the guy who you know, brought the most intensity to practice and who essentially cared the most and who went after everything on every play. And
right,
when I got to the NBA, I realized that everybody does that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that was really shocking to me, because when you grow up and watch the NBA, you expect that guys are just lazy, you know, guys on the court are walking around, they're not putting, you know, everything they have into the game, but it's the exact opposite when you're on the court with them. You know, you never realize how fast everybody is and how hard they're going and how much contact is going on during the game. You know, little things that you really can't see on TV. And so that's the kind of stuff that I started to notice on my very first day. And that's when I started to realize, like, I'm at a whole different level now than college.
Right, that it was a little bit more difficult to distinguish yourself.
Yeah, no question.
But it does sound like that you've never been teammates with Eddie Curry.
With Eddie Curry?
Shots fired. Sorry, I had to drop that.
I mean, yeah, you gotta do what you gotta do. No, I've never played with Eddie. No. But.
So who was the toughest player you had to guard, or someone that's, you know, surprised you the most?
You know, a lot of guys around the league surprised me. I mean, you'd be shocked. You know, a lot of people ask me that same question. They want to hear about the big names. You know, how tough is LeBron? How tough is Kobe? But, man, so many guys in the NBA are tough, even guys you wouldn't even expect. And really, at the end of the day, in basketball at this level, it's about matchups.
Right.
So, you know, you might find yourself matching up well with, you know, one of the best guys in the league, a guy you're not supposed to be able to guard or you know, play well offensively against. But then all of a sudden you go up against a 13-year veteran who's supposed to be old and washed up, and you realize, you know, you can't quite stick with him.
Yeah, they're a bit more crafty.
Yeah. So it's you know, subtle matchup differences like that that makes things tough. Like, just as an example, I remember playing against Michael Finley. And, you know, when I was a rookie.
Michael Finley.
Yeah, when I was a rookie, he was pretty old at the time. I can't even remember what team he played for. It might have been Phoenix, but I remember just chasing him off screens and anticipating him being slow or whatever.
Right.
But, you know, because of the craftiness that he brought to the table and because of his change of speeds, you know, it was tough for me to stick with him at first. And you know, it was just interesting to me to find, you know, I could chase Kobe off of a few screens and stick with him, you know, right on his hip. But then chasing Michael Finley off the screen because of the subtle things he was doing, you know, was a little bit tougher. So stuff like that made it interesting.
Michael Finley from Chicago. I guess the old man still had it back then, huh?
Yeah, I mean, he had it at least for a couple minutes.
Well, one of the things that I remember most from your rookie year was how you were robbed from participating in the slam dunk contest during All-Star Weekend. How pissed were you that you didn't make it?
You know what, to be honest with you, I was excited when, you know, the prospect first came up, but by the time the dunk contest came around, I was just so frustrated with my rookie year at that time that I didn't want anything else distracting me or anything, you know, taking my mind away from trying to get more minutes. So I was happy that I wasn't in it.
But now,
even more happy that I wasn't in it, because I'm a much better dunker now. So I think that if I would have been in it at that time, it would have robbed the public of
so you might have something in store for us later down the road, huh?
Man, I hope so. If I'm ever in the dunk contest, I'll show you something I've never seen before, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was the year that Kryptonate won jumping over Superman.
Kryptonate,
And at the time, I guess in the past few years, I haven't been the most thrilled with Nate Robinson, but now that he's on the Bulls, I've basically jumped on the bandwagon.
yeah. I mean, Nate's a good player, and he's got a lot that he brings to the table too, so I think that he'll be good for the Bulls.
So the following year, you suffer that injury with your hamstring that you mentioned before, sidelined you for the majority of the season, and then after the trade deadline, you were sent to the Bulls. What were your thoughts when you first found out you'd been traded, and what was that like getting traded?
Yeah, well, I got called up at midnight by my agent after about 2 weeks of deliberation where I had no idea what was going to happen with me. I didn't know if the Bucks were going to keep me, if they were going to trade me to who knows where. And then at the last second, my agent called me around like 11 at night and told me, you're not going anywhere. You're staying put in Milwaukee. And then 1 hour later, he called me back and said, you just been traded to Chicago.
Really?
Yeah. So, and that's just the way it works in the NBA sometimes. But man, to tell you the truth, I was so excited.
Right. I was going to say, were you devastated? Were you excited about the new opportunity, the new fresh start?
No, I was very excited. Just the opportunity to play in Chicago. I mean, it's obviously a more well-known franchise than Milwaukee. And, that alone, provided me with, a lot of excitement to go there and also to give myself a fresh start, because I had been with Milwaukee and things hadn't been going well. So I was looking forward to getting with new coaches, new management, people who could look at me different and maybe appreciate my game in a way that Milwaukee didn't. So I was excited.
Yeah, I could tell you that I was jacked up. I thought that bringing you on, obviously we share mutual friends, and I knew that what you could bring to the table could potentially help the Bulls. What was the biggest change you noticed between Milwaukee and Chicago, whether it be the city, the fans, the culture? What was the biggest change?
There's a lot of differences. From the court's perspective, the coaching style is very different. And, Del Negro really gave the players a lot more freedom. We had probably a fourth of the amount of plays that we were running in Milwaukee. Derek had just a ton of freedom on the court to essentially, do what he wanted. And so that made practices a lot different, actually. Practices were much more mellow, much more, it was more of just getting in the flow of our offense and letting the players take control as opposed to, running all our sets, in a very strict manner.
That sounds like VDN was more of a player's coach or developed a culture more suited to the players. Do you think it was effective, though?
Well, yeah, that's definitely what he's known for, is being a player's coach. It's tough to say how it would have panned out if he would have stayed here. I mean, stayed in Chicago, So, it's tough to say whether it's effective or not, but really it all comes down to the personnel, I think, at the end of the day. You can't be a player's coach, when you don't have guys like D Rose or, who step up and run things for you. But whether it's effective or not, that's tough to say. It's not something I'm going to get into.
I was about to say, you went from hard-nosed, always grumpy-looking Scott Skiles to Vinny Del Negro. And, Vinny's been pretty blasted here in Chicago and in the media. And it sounds like he wasn't as terrible of a coach as people are saying.
Well, I mean, for the players, we liked him.
Yeah.
Right when I got there, everyone at my Bulls was telling me the same thing. We like Vinny. Obviously they weren't winning, and nobody likes to be losing. But, people, they liked him as a coach. He treated everyone fairly.
Gotcha. So if I'm not mistaken, you became the first player on the Bulls since the great Pete Myers to wear number 20. Pete Myers was, of course, the shooting guard who temporarily replaced Michael Jordan after his first retirement to go play baseball. So, what was the best thing about playing for the Bulls? And I guess what was the thing that maybe surprised you or you liked the least?
What surprised me the least, you said?
What surprised you or you liked the least?
Oh, I see. I mean, the best thing about playing, in the NBA period is just obviously getting on the court with a lot of talented guys. Mm-hmm. And, that was one of my favorite things about going to a new team like the Bulls, was I got to, experience a lot of different guys in practice. Like, now I was playing with Joe Kim, with D Rose, with Lou, mm-hmm. and I was getting to see what they brought to the table every day and seeing what their work ethic was like. And that was fun for me. But aside from that, part of the great thing about being in the league is getting to know guys off the court, getting to travel with them and be on the plane with them. We were with a lot of personalities like Gennaro Pargo was on the team, you know, mm-hmm. Flip Murray, Brad Miller and Kirk, and, you know, just hanging out with them, playing poker and relaxing, you know, that was fun for me.
Did you have any teammate in particular that you became close friends with?
I mean, I'd say, you know, we were all fairly close. I mean, I still talk to a couple of those guys every now and then, but, you know, we would always sit down and have pretty much the same guys at the poker table. It'd always be me, Gennaro, Kirk, Brad, and Flip, so.
Okay. Now, so what was it like playing with D. Rose on a daily basis?
Well, I mean, as you know, he's a great player, and, you know, he can do things that you don't see very often, so. Mm-hmm. You know, every game or every practice, we'd have a couple moments where we'd all have to just kind of look at each other in awe and just say, you know, did he really just do that? You know, sometimes when he would turn on the speed or make some, you know, some crazy move that we hadn't seen before. So
you caught him, I think I was obviously both of your second years. Did you see him back then becoming the superstar that he is now and even MVP of the league?
Oh, no question. Yeah. I mean, everyone on the team understood at that time that even though he was showing everybody a lot, that he had really just scratched the surface.
Really?
And I think everyone was, you know, I got the sense when I got to the Bulls that everyone was kind of anticipating and working and trying to push him into that and just kind of waiting for him to come around. And, you know, it was obvious just really? Seeing some of the stuff that he could do.
So you can confirm that he's not a robot and he actually is a human being, because sometimes he comes off in these interviews very monotone and not showing much emotion.
No, Derek's just altogether, he's a good guy. He's humble. I mean, around the league, you'll find a lot of guys with big egos, but D. Rose is not one of them. You know, he's really just a down-to-earth good guy, and he's quiet, but that's just his personality.
Right. Yeah. Well, hopefully he can recover and return to form after that ACL tear. Not only did you play with D. Rose, but also you played with several players that are on the Bulls today. Like you mentioned, Luol Deng, Heinrich, Joakim Noah, even Taj Gibson. Did any of those guys stick out to you as someone who was going to have a long and effective career? Or conversely, was there anyone that surprised you that was going to make it this long?
Well, I mean, that's a tough question to answer. Anytime you talk about guys, you know, prospects in the long term, it's tough. But I will say, you know, first of all, Taj Gibson has got a great game. And, you know, as a young player in the NBA, at least when I was there, you know, he shocked a lot of people with what he could do. Mm-hmm. He came in with a lot of confidence. And since then, he's just built on that. So I've been impressed with what he's done. But I'd say the thing I was most impressed with when I got to the Bulls was Joakim Noah.
Really?
Yeah. You know, even to this day, I haven't played with somebody in games or in practice who brings the type of energy that he brings.
No, you know, he's just not a nonstop motor, huh?
He is a motor. That's the best way to describe him. I mean, in practice and in times where we were all going, you know, 80-90% and where, you know, it's pretty typical for a team to have lulls in practice, but, you know, Joakim at those times just wouldn't have it. And he'd bring the energy, you know, from a vocal standpoint, from, you know, picking himself up and running faster, from getting more intense, you know, and that was really impressive to see. And he did it day in and day out.
That's good to hear. I mean, you think that, you know, that he brings it both on and off the court, I should say, in games and out of games. Yeah, Joakim and both Taj, like you mentioned before, hopefully are going to be cornerstones of this franchise for years to come. I know that Taj Gibson's contract is a point of contention right now, whether the Bulls are going to have the money to afford him. To kind of bring your, I guess, perspective on your time with the Bulls, what do you think you'll remember most?
I think I remember most just playing in practice with the guys. Obviously, I didn't get a lot of minutes when I was there. I only played in 8 games, so I can't reflect too much on that. But getting to work out with the guys, getting to challenge everybody in practice and see where everyone's skills were at and to see how I matched up against them, you know, those were the best times for me.
Now, I could tell you what my favorite moments of your tenure here were. I actually have a couple that I wanted to share with you, which I don't know if you'll remember. One was on the court, one was off the court. Okay. My favorite on-court memory was when you swatted LeBron James during a regular season game at the United Center against the Cavs.
Yes.
Do you remember that?
Of course,
and
of course.
Not too many people say that they've blocked King James.
Yeah, I mean, I like to not talk about it too much. I mean, it's, you know, blocking someone's shot is a kind of normal part of basketball, and as an NBA player, I like to think that it's not too crazy for me to block LeBron.
Right.
But yeah, that was, it was, you know what? It was nice for me because I was put in at the end of a half, and I was kind of looked at as a guy who didn't belong in the game, and then to be put on LeBron and have him, you know, automatically want to ISO against me.
Mm-hmm. And that was impressive.
Obviously insulting to me. to respond by blocking him.
Well, you definitely stepped up. And I think my second favorite memory, and this was, I guess, a little bit of an off-court incident. You were inactive during a playoff game, sitting at the end of the Bulls bench, when my girlfriend at the time, who's now my fiance, we were sitting a couple rows behind you. And at one point during the game, I had to go to the bathroom. So I stepped away from my seat and I came back and my girlfriend is yelling at other Bulls fans and pointing at me. Needless to say, I had no idea what was going on, but apparently the story goes these fans were heckling you for not wearing any dress socks while you were in street clothes. my girlfriend, being the righteous one that she is, decided to interject and try to defend your honor, only to be dismissed by the fans as just another groupie. And that's when I arrived or returned to my seat, and it was so awkwardly hilarious because she had never met you and only knew you as one of our friends. Right. And I think she did end up showing them up because the hecklers kept quiet for the rest of the game. So I just want to make sure you got dress socks now.
Well, you know what? In the NBA, most of the guys don't wear socks.
I did not know that.
Yeah. So, I mean, unbeknownst to the fans, that's just how guys do it in the NBA. I mean, if they want to wear socks, that's their deal. But that's not really how everyone in the NBA does it. So no reason for them to heckle us for it.
In case you weren't aware, my girlfriend, now fiance, had your back.
I appreciate it. I really do. I'll make sure to thank her next time I see her.
So your time with the Bulls was all too brief, and the team decided to go in a different direction the summer of 2010. And I do feel like you were a victim of the Bulls' pursuit of LeBron, trying to cut some payroll so that they can attract LeBron and some other high-profile free agents, which of course didn't happen. How difficult was it for you to leave, you know, that team, especially it being the second team in less than a year? And, you know, did you even see it coming?
Well, you know, I was actually not a victim of the LeBron chase. I was a victim of the coaching change.
Oh, okay.
You know,
okay.
When I came to the Bulls, it was for strictly contract reasons, and that mine was expiring, and they, you know, wanted my expiring contract. But, you know, they had told me flat out that they wanted me after the season, which to me was an affirmation that, you know, I played well in practice and that they liked what they saw. Mm-hmm. So I was looking forward to them re-signing me. But unfortunately, once the news came in that, you know, they were getting Tibbs and, you know, I learned later that Tibbs didn't know a lot about my game. He wasn't a fan of my game, and that, you know, that he didn't want me. So essentially that was when they decided to go in another direction, which is fine. You know, Tibbs is obviously a great coach.
Right. That actually surprised me a lot. I mean, especially with the reputation that Tibbs has built as, you know, another hard-nosed coach that demands a lot of his players, and knowing your work ethic, I would think that he would be receptive to keeping you on the team. And, you know, I might have to start an anti-Tibbs campaign now.
Oh, no, there's no that. I appreciate it. You know, Tibbs is a great coach, and he knows what he's doing. So now
I'm not trying to get you in trouble or anything, but the Bulls organization has developed a reputation for being cheap and disloyal, regardless of whether that's accurate or overblown by the media. But fans like myself can conclude that, you know, the Bulls do have issues attracting free agents, especially, you know, this summer where there's been a lot of roster changes and a lot of swings and misses, I guess, even if that wasn't the Bulls' intent with attracting free agents. So during your time here in Chicago, was there anything you witnessed or experienced that, you know, reinforced this reputation?
You know what, I witnessed and experienced things to the contrary, actually. I felt like, you know, at least in dealing with the players that were on their roster, the Bulls really went above and beyond in providing what we needed. You know, but of course, I had just come from Milwaukee.
Right.
But, you know, the Bulls were really attentive to, you know, spending an extra dollar. You know, obviously, I don't mean literally a dollar, but
right.
Spending the extra money that it took to make sure that we were accommodated, that we got what we needed. So I definitely didn't witness that when I was there.
Well, that's good to hear. And hopefully, you know, the 5 or 6 listeners who actually tune into our podcast can relay that over to some of these free agents that we'll be targeting in summers to come.
Yeah.
So you finally got healthy and were really on the come up, being selected to the D-League All-Star Game, averaging 20-9 for the Texas Legends of the D-League, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the Dallas Mavericks feeder team. Mm-hmm. Your return to the NBA was somewhat derailed by last year's lockout. Would you agree?
Oh, yeah, no question. Well, I had gone to a number of mini camps over the summer to, you know, see what kind of interest there was from different teams, and I thought that I'd gotten a lot, and that I had a couple teams tell me they wanted me to stay and not go anywhere and wait out the lockout. But as a player, that's a dangerous situation to be in because you risk, you know, losing an entire year's salary. So I decided to go overseas, and you know, it was a, you know, so that's what happened there.
So tell us, what are you up to now these days?
Well, now I'm obviously a free agent again because I only signed a one-year contract last year, and I'm looking to hopefully get back in the NBA.
Awesome, awesome. So are you then looking, or at least right now, trying out with teams, or what's what are kind of the short-term goals for you?
Right. Well, training camp obviously starts at the beginning of October. Mm-hmm. So right now I'm just weeding through, you know, where I want to go to camp, where the best opportunity presents itself. And then I'll have to make a decision ultimately on where I want to go to try out. And then hopefully once that happens, I'll make a good impression and make the team.
And so you just said you signed a one-year contract. Was it with a team in Russia, right?
Yeah, a team in Russia, yep.
And so how was that experience?
It was a heck of an experience, man. It was vastly different from life in the NBA. Well, you know, the game itself is different overseas. Everybody knows that who's watched international ball.
Right.
And, you know, there are just a million subtle nuances that change everything about the game. So you got to learn to play a little bit differently, and that's a challenge in itself. But obviously living in Russia presents its own challenges.
Right, right.
So it's a lot of cultural differences, and you know, it's a lot to take in.
Do they call you Vanilla Sky in Russian?
They don't, but I should have had a translator before I went.
Now, Russia isn't your only international connection. You were born in Taiwan, grew up in China, and with the Summer Olympics wrapping up not too long ago, any chance that we could see you on one of these national teams, whether it be for Russia or China, perhaps in 2016?
Shoot, I don't know, man.
Has that ever crossed your mind?
Yeah, it's definitely crossed my mind. I get that question a lot, actually. You know, being born in Taiwan, I think that I, through some crazy loop, could be eligible to play on the Chinese national team. I'm not sure how, but
that'd be awesome.
You know what? I don't have an answer for that, but I'm going to say that it is possible.
That's awesome, man. Well, that'd be great. I'd have to make the trip down to Rio de Janeiro, up in Brazil in 2016 to catch a play. So, you know, looking back so far with your NBA career, you know, the 2 years both in Milwaukee and Chicago, and I think you played a little bit with the Hornets, if I'm not mistaken.
The Hornets, yeah.
Is there anything that you would have done differently?
Well, heck, man, in retrospect, I would have done almost everything differently. So
what would have been the ideal career path for you if you had more control over it?
Well, if I had more control over things, then I would have dealt with my injuries in a different way when I was in Milwaukee. Mm-hmm. And that, in my opinion, would have led to me staying there, you know, and never leaving. But, you know, at the time, you know, when I first came into the NBA, I was young and I didn't know exactly how to deal with being hurt. I'd never been hurt before. So I think that has been the major thing that has changed my career. You know, without injuries, I think that I would still be in Milwaukee. So,
well, I'm looking forward to you getting back on the court and pursuing a return back to the league. It sounds like you still keep up with the league pretty frequently, huh?
Oh, of course, yeah. You know, watching the game is part of is part of getting yourself better. So I certainly keep up with what's going on.
So, you know, with the season not too far off, do you have any predictions for the upcoming year? Who do you see right now winning the title?
Well, I think Miami's obviously a great bet. Mm-hmm. You know, as the defending champs, and they're just going to be that much more experienced and hopefully just as hungry. Obviously, it was a shame with D. Rose, you know, dropping out last year. You kind of got to put that little asterisk by Miami's ring.
Right, you
know, which
right.
is a shame. But so I'm looking for the Bulls to be big contenders this year. And obviously, you got the Lakers. You know, you don't even have to think about that. They're definitely going to be up there. So.
Yeah, anytime you essentially put out three, maybe four Hall of Famers out on the court at the same time, I know Nadav's going to be happy watching the Lakers this year. It's a tough pill to swallow, being a Chicago fan and not knowing the uncertainty, I should say, of Rose's return and how this team's going to stack up against these super teams, especially with a more depleted bench. Compared to prior years. So it should be a pretty tough season for us fans here in Chicago.
Yeah, hopefully they pull it off. So.
All right, Joe. Well, again, appreciate your time. Best of luck in the future. Let me know if you're ever back in the city. Definitely love
Will do.
to meet up and hopefully have you again on the show.
Will do. Thanks, Jay. I appreciate you having me on, and tell your fiance thanks for having my back.
Not a problem. Best of luck this season. We'll talk again soon.
All right, man.
All right, take care. And that will do it for this episode of the Mitch and Nils Bull Show. I'd like to thank again Joe Alexander, a.k.a. Vanilla Sky, for joining us. But we'll get Mitch back on here soon enough. Again, you can find the Bull Show on ShyCitySports.com, Facebook, Twitter, iTunes. Hit us up sometime. We'd love to hear from you on any feedback or any topics you'd like to discuss, with the season still about a month and a half away. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.